That is another thing I got from my dad, is a genetic inability to develop muscle tone. I don't eat that much. I work out. Every time I take off my shirt, I'm built like a condom full of walnuts.
Yet another condom full of walnuts, everyone.
I'm not joking around here.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 76.
Woo!
In what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series.
Oh, hey.
I'm your host, Aaron Roden.
Whoa, ass ahoy.
And I'm gonna be the captain on this this little trip through the air raid on your soul. Ah, that was terrible.
Are you off your fucking meds or something?
This, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. And, welcome. Thank you for joining us on this week. It's been kind of a weird, long week for me. And I will get into that in just a moment. But first, we've got a great show planned for you today. Or this week, what have you. Dana Gould, comedian Dana Gould, writer on The Simpsons for several years, also a fantastic comedian, and had a part, one of my favorite things that he's ever done. He was Fragile Frankie Merman.
Kelly Clarkson!
On the awesome television show, Seinfeld. So he'll be joining us in just a moment. I must apologize because this episode is going up a day late. A day and some odd hours late. So it's been had a crazy week. First off, told you last week we went out, we did the holiday thing. We got the tree. So now we got the Christmas tree, and we had this, you know, grand plan on decorating the tree and decorating the house as a family while watching the movie Elf. So I stick in the movie Elf. First off, Tatum falls asleep. Put Tatum to bed. I pause Elf. We put Tatum to bed. And I come back out, and I'm ready to, you know, start on the holiday festivities. We had even talked about possibly making some hot chocolate and doing that thing. Because when it comes to holidays, I like tradition. Like I said in episode 75, I'm a big fan of tradition when it comes to holidays. And so this was going to be, you know, this was going to be special. We were going to do all this special stuff. And then I break out all the tree trimmings. All the miscellaneous decorations for the house, and then all of a sudden I turn around and Mairead is asleep on the couch. So I did it by myself, like a true father. I fixed this place up, man, and it looks fantastic. I'm super proud of it. But little view on what goes on inside my head. I am somewhat OCD when it comes to creating patterns and organizing things, right? So I'm decorating the tree. We have these big, you know, what do you call it? They're ornaments, but they're like the ball ornaments, you know, and the big ones. Actually, they're not that big. They're medium sized, but they only come in like four colors. And so I'm putting these up on the tree, and then all of a sudden I realize that there's too many greens next to each other, and over here on the other side of the tree there's too many blues next to each other. So then I have to take those down, and I have to, you know, switch it up a little bit, and then all of a sudden there's too many reds next to each other, and that drove me a little bit mad because the tree is only so big, and I can't, you know. There's no sense in putting ornaments on the back of the tree because nobody's going to see it, right? If it's in a corner, which is where mine is. And so I have all these ornaments that are kind of going around the front and the sides of the tree. And so it took me a long time to kind of get them all situated into a nice pattern. And it basically took me until the movie Elf was over, until I got it done. Boy, it was very trying times, for me. And then my wife woke up. And she said, "Oh wow, the house looks great." So at least I got that covered. That's one thing done. But I'm still looking outside, staring down at all the leaves that are down there. I still haven't done that, boy. And they're just screaming my name right now. They are screaming my name, taunting me. And I know when I go down there and clean that shit up, that there's going to be at least 6 doggy piles down in there that I'm going to stick my hands straight in. So. It's starting to freeze outside, so maybe that won't be such a problem. But like I said, we had kind of a rough week for the Roden family this week. It was a little bit bittersweet. On Wednesday, the day that we were supposed to do the Dana Gould interview, he was coming over to Dining Room Studios here in the Greenwood neighborhood of North Seattle, And he was slated to come over around 5:30 at night. I was going to go to the show that night and check it out. Well, Wednesday morning rolls around. My dad calls me on my walk to the transit center and informs me that my grandfather is basically on his deathbed. And so this had happened a couple weeks prior as well, and he made it through. So I wasn't too worried about it. But then I got to work and I started thinking that it would be really bad if my grandfather passed away today, and I didn't get to say goodbye. So I'm sitting there at work. I was there for about an hour until I decided to go catch a bus back over to the Seattle area and go see my grandfather. And I stayed there the home that he was in for all morning, and at around, 3 o'clock. And, he was unconscious the whole time. And I know this is kind of a sad subject here, but, it's bittersweet. He went out with his family surrounding him. He was unconscious the whole time, and he wasn't in any pain. We were giving him some morphine drip and things like that. And so around 3 o'clock rolls around and I needed to get back home and start things up for the show, get things prepared. I get home, I'm not here for 20 minutes. And my dad calls me and said that he passed. And I felt so guilty, that I left to go do an interview with a comedian. And so I talked to my grandma about this that night. Later that night, I went ahead and I did the interview. And I think you'll hear a little bit at the beginning. I am not quite there, I don't think. But it gets better. It gets better. It's still a very good interview. Dana Gould, a very, very nice man. I felt very guilty. We all went out to dinner later that night. Shed some tears, of course, in remembrance of my grandfather, who is just a fantastic human being. I got my first name from him. My full name is James Aaron Roden. My grandfather's name was James Earl Roden, and he was a great man. He was a fantastic carpenter, and a very, very hard worker. Taught me how to shoot a gun. That man did. And he led a great life and left behind a wonderful family, raised a wonderful family. But yeah, I felt very guilty that I had come back and I put this podcast. I felt like I put this show ahead of my family. And when I told my grandmother that, she said it was nonsense. She said, you love doing this thing. You seem to be good at it. and your grandfather wouldn't want it any other way. He was a good man. James Earl Roden. Sorry. I'm going to miss him a lot. It's my hope that all of you that are listening to this have had the luck that I have had in my life with having such a loving family. Ones who are so supportive in everything that you do. And that's the meaning of life right there, right? Having people that love you and support you. And my grandfather was one of those people. So, Grandpa, wherever you are, I will miss you. And I'll carry you with me for the rest of my life. And carry what you have taught me. Especially how to save money. And how to shoot a gun. James Earl Roden, he was a fantastic man. We're going to get started with this. Boy, sorry for bringing it down there. Sorry for bringing it down, everyone. I apologize. But it's just something that, that needs to be talked about. And it's a great excuse for why this episode is going up a day late. So, anyway, without further ado, I hope you enjoy it. Dana Gould will be joining us in just a moment. We're going to go, we're featuring music today by the band The Young Evils, a local Seattle band here. Let's see, the lead singer of this band is also a DJ at KEXP. It's really good stuff, so you should check them out. And you know what? I didn't have this prepared once again. God damn it. You know, you'd think after just about 2 years of doing this that I might have my shit together. There you go. My grandpa's watching me. He's watching me from somewhere right now, and he's just shaking his head. Anyway, this is The Young Evils. The song is called A Just Built Beaming Light, off of their album Enchanted Chapel. And you can find them at theyoungevils.com. Let's see. Yeah, A Just Built Beaming Light here on the Air Raid Podcast. We'll be right back with more with Mr. Dana Gould. So stick around. We'll be back. Erase the face of holding on to something when the one thing that it's holding is time. A golden era, a pair of lovers trying to figure out the doubt that's about to lead to glasses of wine. And we'll watch them run, run, run to glory on a just built beaming light. We'll take their chances over. Just repeating, being what they've been and what they find. All right, we are back, and joining me in Dining Room Studios, high above the Greenwood neighborhood here in North Seattle, is comedian, writer, producer, avid tweeter, dumpster hater, Dana Gould. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much.
Hi. Every podcast I do, they throw that in my face.
The dumpster tweet.
That was also the day I decided to do my own, by the way, just so everyone is...
Right. Yeah. You were telling me a little bit about this. Let's start with that, because actually I was going to ask you, that was going to be like my intro question. Mm-hmm. You are like a professional podcast
guest.
You're always on Adam Carolla's show.
Yeah.
You've been on WTF with Mark Maron. And The Nerdist.
When are you going to do your own show?
Well,
because I think it'd be really good.
Well, I have some ideas to make it interesting and not just and something unique. I mean, I want the two things happened at the same time. I have been working for years on a big movie for Universal Studios, a big tentpole.
Really?
Movie that would have been a franchise, and I worked on it for about 2.5 years.
This is writing?
Yeah.
You're writing?
Well, I wrote
the
script, and I wrote about 37 drafts of the script.
Transformers, what, 5?
Along those lines.
Okay.
I'll tell you what it is off air. And we finally were ready, and then it went through the food chain, and they went, well, we can either make this one or this one, and we're going to, you know, it was basically we can start this franchise or do the second installment of this franchise.
Yeah.
We can't do both. We're going to do the second installment. So it was basically 2 years of a lot of work every day up in smoke. I mean, I did get a check, but it was just, and it was like, God. And for all of that time, I could have put into something that would have reached the public.
Right.
And right at that time, I was on The Nerdist, and then I was working in Atlanta at a really great comedy club called The Laughing Skull.
Uh-huh.
And it's just a lot of feedback from both events of like, you should do a podcast. You should do a podcast. You should
do
a podcast.
Yeah.
So I started thinking about it seriously, like, well, how can I do it so that I can do what I do and not have it just be me jaw-jacking for an hour.
Right.
And
right.
I came up with a couple of ideas. I have some really talented people that are willing to go and do it with me. And so I decided, okay, I'll throw my hat into the ring. I'm going to give it, you know, as I said, like you give it a, allow it to grow.
Uh-huh.
But I'm very excited about the ability now, because of technology, to make your own show business.
Right.
You know, you can build your own career. You can have a podcast. You develop an audience. You publicize it on your Twitter feed and Facebook to a lesser degree. People join in and you get a groundswell of support. You can go on the road and do the podcast live. People come to that show.
Yeah.
Then you take, then you say to HarperCollins, I have 200,000, dedicated listeners. I'd like to write a book of essays.
Yeah,
I'll go,
yeah.
And some of them will buy it. Absolutely. Great. And now, and everything that you do goes back into your own business.
Right.
You know, and
there is something to be said though for like, I mean, you've got name recognition too. So
yeah.
You've got.
I've been doing it a long time.
Yeah. You've been.
I'm older than dirt, and I have more scars than Frankenstein.
And from the cut that we played at the beginning of the show, you're apparently a condom full of walnuts.
Exactly.
That you inherited from your father.
Look at me.
Well, when I saw that, I was actually like, man, we've got a lot in common. This is great.
Yeah.
This is great.
The Fred Flintstone build.
Right. Yeah. Upside down pear shape.
I have the same shadow as Fred Flintstone.
Tie and all, right?
My whole fitness goal has always been look good enough in clothes that by the time you get your shirt off, they feel too sorry for you to run screaming from the room.
Right. My whole philosophy was just like, just drug one and then marry her.
Yeah.
Just
imagine me with clothes on.
Exactly.
It's the reverse of speaking.
Right.
It's the reverse of public speaking. Imagine I'm dressed.
Don't break eye contact.
Don't look away. I was once a beautiful baby.
Exactly. Yeah. Pull those pictures out. Yeah. But there is something to be said.
Think of me as a baby. Think of me as a baby all night.
You'd have to find a very willing woman for that. I guess,
I'm sure there are hundreds of thousands on a web group somewhere.
And you'll find out about them now that you're going to do a podcast.
But that.
You'll get
indeed.
Emails. Right. So there is something to be said about like doing this kind of thing on your own. I mean, with things like Facebook and Twitter.
And to do something interesting, like Chris Hardwick, Paul F. Tompkins, Mark Maron, Adam Carolla.
these guys are all my friends.
Right, right.
You know, they're like, I go on their show, but I go on the show because I've known them for decades.
Yeah, they're, yeah. And they're easy to talk to. It's basically just like right. chatting with a with
but
a
I want to be able to also have dinner with them and look them in the eye. Like, right, yeah, I did my own thing. I came late to the, you know, I came after you, but I want to do my own thing. I'm very, very enamored of all of those guys and how they really carved something out that they made unique. I think that's right. really impressive, and it's my favorite thing about show business. I mean, I'm not a person that I like to make stuff. You know, I've always mm-hmm. chose the creative route over the money power route.
Right. Right.
And for better and for worse. And but it's I like to make stuff, and I'm at ease. I have no problem with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you think that philosophy?
It's just me farting. That I'm gonna just say it. The show you is just me farting.
You and a fart machine.
Yeah,
and sound
me and
drops.
A fart machine. I have a bell that I ring, and, yeah. and it goes. And I think I can fill
perfect.
The hour.
You know, if you well, I mean, you could really make that into you. That'd be a niche podcast.
Sure. Well, you know,
because
FM,
you could just use all sorts of handheld gizmos,
right.
to make those.
Well,
make
every
those
big
sounds.
City has that the wacky morning team.
It's right, right.
A man's name and then an inanimate object. It's right, always right. you know Barry and the duck call or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah,
Scooter and chainsaw, and I want to be just the chainsaw dude, and it's just like and the whole show is me going, am I right?
Am I? Yeah.
Hey, that's worse than Congress. And just leave out the other
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, you need to work on your radio voice, though. I think.
Well, there's several. There's that guy. Oh, that's worse than Congress or NPR.
Yeah,
NPR is amazing because you could do a show on NPR about an incredibly graphic, grotesque thing.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
because you're in NPR, that mood sinks into your head.
Right, and it still sounds smart.
Yeah, but that mood sinks into your head, and. You start to talk. So, you were at a bukkake that was completely populated by clowns. Tell me about that. Well, clown bukkake is something that we started in college.
It's a small group.
It's a small group of clowns.
Very friendly people.
And one very unlucky clown.
Oh, my God.
Who had that idea
well,
first?
Well, it's like, NPR, too.
I've got an
like,
idea. No, you don't.
you can either listen to NPR to get smarter, or you can listen to it to help you go to sleep.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
2 hours of Bolivian rhino farts coming up on Thought Patterns. I hate that crap.
Oh, my God.
I hate that crap.
Oh, that's hilarious. So
one of the pro things that we're going to do on my show is I have – rotating bits that are pre-recorded, you know, like, and one of them is Seth Bosch jazz soundscapes, and it's just this really pretentious jazz, modern jazz DJ,
right, right,
but interspersed with his father talking about his childhood and how his father utterly missed him.
Seth seemed to enjoy having the other children hit him. In the throat and back of his neck.
And then cutting back to Chaz, I hated it. He never understood me. I think we can do something interesting.
Now, is that a play on your own family life right there? Or is...
No, it's sort of my salute to Lars Ulrich's misunderstanding father and Metallica's
Some kind of monster. You know,
I think you should take the tape and burn it.
Oh, my God. I just watched that, too.
That's amazing. That documentary is, to me, the best movie about marriage. Because it really is. They're in a band, but it's a marriage. And it's
right.
Like,
well, they're seeing a counselor for the whole time through the... And how much did that counselor want to be involved with writing those songs? That's where things started to get awkward.
I'm working on a show based on that premise for FX.
Oh, my God.
I guess I can announce it because it's the deals are done. Dave Grohl is producing it.
Oh, no shit.
And it's a comedy about a counselor that gets involved with a band.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, again, this is just a script. So
this
might be all you ever hear of it. But it's sort of a cross between the Metallica situation and the Beach Boys, Brian Wilson situation with Dr. Eugene Landy, where the therapist is actually more fucked up than the band.
I think that's a great combo. I think there's a lot of meat there for comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
Because a band is like a married couple. And, you know, it's like, yeah, you
have... Especially one that's been around for that long and
you can't just walk away.
Too. Right.
You have
right.
to deal with this problem.
Yeah, totally.
And, you know, I've been... You're married. I'm married. And I assume you're married or living certainly as a married person.
I pay her to be here. Yeah.
That's a good gig. You know, we've had, you know, it's like, oh, you know, you can't just leave. You're not dating anymore.
Right.
You've got to work through this crap.
Yeah.
That's totally. The funniest stuff. That's the funniest stuff.
You know? Well, man, so is that it? The deals are done?
The deals are done.
Yeah.
And now I start writing.
Okay.
But,
okay.
But I'm not, but, and I could just do that this year.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
If it, some guy up the chain goes, nah. It's another year up in smoke.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's like I really want to sort of do stuff that people get.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your experience doing, you know, show business then a little bit.
I'm in show business.
Yeah. Like producing shows. I mean, I'm getting the sense that that when these projects come up and you have an idea, something gets, you know, pseudo greenlit. And then you start the process of creating this or refining this idea that you want to put on television or into a movie.
I'll give you a great story.
Like
I'll give you a great story.
Yeah,
it's one of the reasons that I'm enamored of the sort of make your own show business world.
Yeah.
Which I think is, I like it because it's, for lack of a better term, punk. It's basically like, we don't need Arista Records. We don't need to sign to Sire.
Yeah.
I mean, it's what Black Flag and all those guys were doing. It's just like, fuck it. We'll do it ourselves. We don't need you.
Yeah.
I really love that. 2 years ago, I did a special on Showtime called Let Me Put My Thoughts in You. And I told a lot of stories about my being a father for the first time and comparing it to my own experiences as a son to my father.
Right.
And an executive at Warner Brothers Television saw it, called me up, said, come on in. I want to talk to you about that. I saw that special. I think that's a show. I think you should write that as a pilot for a sitcom.
Uh-huh.
And I went, no. Because that's my first response to everything.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to blow you. No. And my agent talked me into doing it. Thank you, Larry. I wrote it, and we made it as a pilot. It got picked up, and we made it, and it was a pilot for last fall.
Yeah,
you know, they spent $1 million.
Were you proud of it?
Yeah, it was great. I played me. Brian Dennehy played my father.
Oh, really?
Trailer Howard from Monk played my wife, and we had kid actors, and they spent a ton of money, and it came out great, and was really proud of it, and. At the end of it, they went, we're not going to do that. We're going to do this, whatever show they picked up. I don't even know what it was. Tin Full of Biscuits or Fart Hospital.
And, Whitney.
That was NBC. I can't blame Whitney. And it didn't get picked up. So, again, it's just like, but that's how show business works.
Yeah.
You know,
soul-crushing each time, or are you used to it now?
I should be used to it.
Yeah.
But I don't. That was really personal. I mean, that was about my... That was me writing a show starring me, playing me with my wife and my father. And it was very, and when it didn't get picked up, it was kind of a kick in the balls.
Right.
But again, it was more just for the fact that people don't get to see it. You know, there's not a place where you can at least show it. You know, it's just like tough break. And there are people like, Judd Apatow, who will just like, oh, that sucks. I'll do this tomorrow. I'll start this tomorrow.
Right.
Like they just, and I'm much more like, oh, fuck. I got to sit in the tub, jack off for a couple of months, get this out of my system.
Well, there's more than a couple of months of porn out there.
I'm going to sit in this tub
internet.
And jack off, and I'm not going to leave till it's full. Please just play that clip over and over.
I will.
That should be my
actually,
answer to every question
That's going to be a new sound drop at the beginning of each show.
Interesting choice.
Jack off
interesting this, choice of words.
I'm going to masturbate into this bathtub until it's full. And it may take months.
Yeah. And I'm not ragging on Judd. I'm saying Judd has a much better work ethic than I do as well.
Right. Well, yeah. And it's always, that's always been a point of curiosity for me too, is like, You know, because you always hear comedians, especially on Mark Maron's podcast, which I'm a huge fan of.
Uh-huh.
You know, he always gets in to it with his guests about,
yeah, he's good like,
you know, where is this coming from? And, you know, are you a very self-destructive person?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people are, you know, most in the beginning of his show.
And then when the guest comes on, he says.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I love Mark. I've known him since he was, 18.
Yeah. Long haired and coked up.
He's always looked the same. I mean, he's always, I think when you know people that long.
Right.
You
know, right. Yeah. Yeah. They don't change too much. Yeah. In your mind. But there's always like, you know, comedians that are very sour, mm-hmm, about where they're at today.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. I mean, does that...
I think it's everybody. I think there are shoe salesmen that are very sour about where they're at today, too.
Well, sure, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, it seems like that's very prevalent in the comedy world.
Yeah.
Right? And it seems... what I'm getting at, I guess, in a very roundabout way here.
Circuitous.
Yes. Very circuitous route.
The circuitous cast.
Hey, that's a good one. Maybe that should...
I'll run my potential titles by you later.
There you go. There you go. It always seems so soul-crushing, and I am always curious as to why people have stuck with it. You know,
well,
why
you
not
do
why
it?
Not,
I don't think you I do mean, it by choice. I think, you know, right. you have to do this.
Desperation?
Like, yeah, what? You know, no. I was a stand-up for years. I started doing stand-up when I was 17 years old.
Really?
And I was a stand-up for years. And then after I'd been doing it for... I started when I was 17, so after I've been doing it about 18 years, and mm-hmm, I was pretty well established. You know, I'd been on a sitcom, I'd been on Seinfeld, I had
right,
specials,
right.
And I was just about to get married and kind of bored, and I got an offer to write on The Simpsons,
mm-hmm,
and I took it, and I stayed there for about 7 years, and had a great time, and learned how to write, and got... People thought I was a genius because I worked on The Simpsons.
Yeah.
I didn't have to be one, but I really fell away from performing just by the sense of I was working every day.
Yeah.
Very hard. And I was married and I had a house and a wife and we started having kids. And it was a nice era. I get to play like a normal guy.
Yeah, you
know,
yeah.
I went to work in the morning.
Yeah, day job.
I went to work in the morning. I came home at night. I had vacation weeks. And but I really, I think the longest I ever went without doing stand-up was about 6 weeks. And then I would have to go out and do a set someplace.
So what was it for you then? Explain that to me.
Just felt like I just got to do it or I go crazy. Some
really?
People have to golf. Some people have to surf.
Yeah, yeah.
I really have to go on and do it. And I think most good comedians are like that.
Uh-huh.
And they're not good because they're like that. They're not like that because they're good. They're good because they're like that.
Right, right.
That was the correct way to say that.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, hey, let's go to our second musical break. And when we get back, we're going to talk to...
We're going to get in this tub.
Yeah, we're going to get into the bathtub and see how much we can fill that thing
years.
Up.
I bet we could figure it out.
Yeah. Do you want to just skip your show tonight and we'll just work on that?
Well, let's get
it. Yeah. Dana Gould, Aaron Roden project.
We get a lot of hits.
Right.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, yeah.
We wouldn't get a lot of handshakes.
No, nobody would want to touch us ever again, including our wives.
Yeah.
This is Crazy People by the Young Evils.
Most especially.
Right. This is Crazy People by the Young Evils, and we will be back with more of the Air Raid podcast in just one moment. Stay tuned. station wagon?
Yeah.
Or one of the old little like two seater.
No, it's just
like
the box.
Two little two seater.
Box.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah.
It's cherry.
Right, right. Yeah.
I sound
right. All right, we are back. That was the Young Evils with Crazy People. And you can see them. They're going to be playing the Chop Suey on January 14th.
The Young Evils were the people that killed the young Fresh Fellows.
Right. Yeah, yeah. They took their seat at the table. So, Young Fresh Fellows, you must be a music fan.
Yeah. Yeah. You're a Seattle band.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Great band, too.
Yeah, and now one of them
legendary
is
in these parts.
Yes, as well they should be. And yeah. Now one of them is in that weird band with Peter Buck, whatever they call that, Astro Zombies or something.
Yeah, I think I've heard, I don't know if I've heard the actual music, but I have heard of the project.
Yeah. Peter Buck, you know, is, I think Harry Morgan died today, the guy that was, or he died recently.
Harry Morgan, who's that? That's
he
not
was
ringing a
Colonel,
bell.
He was the guy on MASH. And it was one of those things.
Oh.
Like, it was one of those guys like, he was alive? And it was like when they announced that REM had broken up, people were like, they were still together. They were
yeah,
together.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. That joke went around in my head many a time. So you're into music.
Yes.
What kind of music do you listen to? And we were talking about...
I only listen to the Young Fresh Fellows.
That's it. Yeah. We were talking a little bit off air before we started recording that you were a fan of the 90s era.
Yeah, well, it's whatever music you listen to. You know, everybody has that period between 18 and 27 where
right.
your musical loves are sort of codified for the rest of your life.
Yeah, totally.
And I am true to that.
Yeah.
I listen to... the stuff that I listened to then, you know, I listened to a lot of Elvis Costello. I listened to a lot of Tom Waits. I listened to a lot of Pixies. I listened to a lot of Frank Black. I listened to a lot of, and Dylan. I grew up on Dylan because I have older brothers. So I have a good knowledge of the good stuff from that era. And then you listen to new stuff that is of that same flavor.
Right,
you
know, right, yeah. And there seems to be, my dad was saying this to me the other day, he was always, he grew up in the 60s, and he was always a big fan of, like, Beatles and things like that. A little bit more mainstream, you know, style of music back then. And he was saying to me, you know, with bands that he's now finding out about, like Fleet Foxes from Seattle and bands of that nature.
How old
of
is
that
your dad?
Ilk. He is 62.
Yeah, perfect age.
Yeah. And so, you know, he's coming into this, you know, just finding out about all this music because we're predominantly a music podcast. And so we send my parents a bunch of music that we get emailed to us and stuff. And he's like, you know, I think that the music nowadays is better than when I was a kid. And I kind of argued with him about that because a lot of the music nowadays is getting their influence from then-a-days.
You can only be first once.
Right. Yeah.
One of the things that I miss is the sound of analog equipment.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's a good argument to be made that Pro Tools is killing music because I like to hear the slides on the guitar.
Right.
And
right.
I like to hear a sense that I'm there and then it's organic and that they're
yeah,
playing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I like it when bands use old stuff, use old equipment.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. And especially like you were saying in recording too.
Yeah.
Like that
yeah.
makes a huge, huge difference.
Yeah.
We had a band on here a little while back, Pickwick, who's been gaining a lot of popularity here in Seattle and around kind of the Northwest region. And they are currently in the process of recording down in Portland with a guy and they're using reel to reel.
Wow.
And
a TAC.
Yeah, dude. And I was really excited about that because they've got more of a, they've gone kind of the soulful route a little bit. And I think that's just going to, it's going to make it sound so warm and just, it's just going to be great.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, just add to that, their first two singles were released only on 7-inch. So, yeah. People are getting back into that kind of
stuff. I released my first CD, Funhouse Stand Up Records released a an LP version.
Oh, really?
And a limited edition 12 8-tracks.
Yeah. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Just 'cause we How many of those sold?
I think I gave them all to people. But you can get the album at standuprecords.com or whatever their website is.
Nice,
it's pretty
nice.
Easy to remember.
Do you still have it on vinyl, too?
I have it on vinyl. Yeah, I love it. I love it on vinyl.
That's
like,
cool.
Look, I got a record. Because it's just there's something about it. Just,
right,
I got a
right.
record.
Well, it's nostalgic. And
what does it mean? So, like, not every comedian, yeah, yeah. You know, not every comedian in those days had their own record. That was a deal. You know, you had to get a record deal.
Right, you know? Right.
That was
yeah.
impressive.
Yeah. And then tapes came out.
Yeah.
And everybody was, you know, you press record.
I remember my brother coming home from the Army, and he had George Carlin's FM and AM and Class Clown,
uh-huh.
Steve Martin's Let's Get Small, and a couple of Cheech and Chong albums.
Yeah.
And it was like, those people were like rock stars.
So oh, yeah,
They have records.
Totally.
Yeah,
totally.
It was great.
Do you think?
Cool.
Do you think comedy is kind of going that way again? It seems like it's made a bit of a shift, because during...
Well, because of... technology now, open micers have their own record.
Right, right, yeah.
I've done 4 sets. Here's my CD. but comedy, I think, like music, like the argument that your dad was making about music is because they have so much good stuff to look back on and learn from.
Right,
that
right.
they, you know, there's another comedy boom going on of really great comedians doing really great stuff.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, there's really great scenes all over the country. There's a great scene in L.A. right now with a lot of new people that are really sharp and really funny. And,
it's
really encouraging.
And what do you think?
I always feel more comfortable hanging out with those people, like the newer people.
Oh, yeah? Because they look up to you?
No, God. I just think that, Christ, no. But because it's exciting.
Yeah.
They're discovering stuff.
And, right, right.
Yeah.
Do you still get excited about your career?
Oh, yeah, sure. Very.
Yeah.
Every day. Or I wouldn't do it.
Yeah. I guess, if it gets stale, then what are you doing it for, right?
Yeah, it got stale and I wrote on The Simpsons.
Is that's truth?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How was that experience too?
And it was also tied to like just being a person.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted the change in my life. I'd been doing the same thing for 17 years. I'd kind of done it.
Right.
And
right.
I was still young, but because I'd started so early, I was still pretty young.
Uh-huh.
I was only when I started working on it, I think I was 36 years old.
What year was that you started on?
2000.
2000?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I thought, yeah, I'll do this for a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm a young man.
And so what was that experience like? Like going from being a stand-up, because you said earlier that The Simpsons was kind of your first writing gig, right?
Yeah, I'd had a couple of minor things. I'd written some things for myself,
uh-huh.
and I'd written on...
Sorry about the uncomfortable
IKEA
chairs, by the way.
Derek works at IKEA.
Oh, nice. It's your fault.
Derek.
Fucking Swedes.
Slot A. I had written some of that. I'd written for myself. I'd written on the Ben Stiller show. I'd written in some, but it was like, it was definitely a league apart of the stuff that I had been doing recently. I mean, you walk into The Simpsons and it's an impressive, there's a murderer's row of writers sitting around that table. And you
I can imagine.
Know what you're fucking
yeah,
doing.
Yeah.
And you should know what you're doing. So it was impressive. It was intimidating.
And you were super
terrified.
Just terrified when going in there. Because, I mean, that is a brand.
That's a brand. Even you don't want to be the guy that screws it up.
Right, right.
That said, I remember the first joke I said that got in a script and got on an episode.
What was it?
It was an episode called Homer the Drudge.
Yeah.
Where Homer started a Matt Drudge-like website. And somehow...
I remember that one.
Somehow in the third act, he ended up on the island from the prisoner... with Patrick McGoohan, and they were escaping, and like in The Prisoner, they sent those big balloons after Homer,
right,
and he just popped them with a hairpin, and then, and then they cut back to the two guards at the station, and the one guard said, why did you have balloons as a security device? And we spent an hour and a half trying to come up with an answer. And
right,
I just
right.
said, shut up. That's why. And that's what they used. And that's what stayed.
And that's a perfect Homerism, too.
Yeah.
Right?
Shut up. That's why.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So do you do much when you go on to a project like that? Like you said, you've worked on Ben Stiller and things like that. Do you have to do you've got to do your research, right, before you go in?
Well, because you're writing for a... I was pretty familiar with The Simpsons.
Well, yeah. That's an easy one.
Yeah.
That's an easy one.
But if you do other
But you
stuff,
have to
yeah.
be a you have to be familiar with an established character.
Right. Yeah, right? You got to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And you have to...
Does that make it more difficult?
It does. And you also have to leave your ego at the door. You're not there
to write for other
people. You're not there to write for yourself. You're there to write for the characters.
Right.
No one cares. And your words are not precious. And everything you write is going to get rewritten.
Right.
Every single thing you write. So...
Okay.
Don't be in love with your own writing.
Yeah.
Which is a great lesson for any writer.
Right. And I thought of that last night as I was watching like early episodes of 30 Rock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they're all sitting around the writer's table and just pitching ideas to each other and stuff like that and throwing things away.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, right.
You know, and have you seen the South Park documentary?
No.
6 days to air.
No.
You should see that. It's really, really interesting. And just
fantastic.
Watching them snowball ideas off of each other. And, you know, that show is...
That show's amazing.
It's amazing, and it's crazy how they do it.
Yes.
Because
I know. I'm
familiar
doing with
it
their process.
Once a week, man.
Yeah.
They're, like, actually writing the show every week.
Yeah. I don't know how those guys do it.
Which is insane.
It's really... Really impressive.
Yeah, yeah. Trey Parker looks like he's just going to die soon. Like,
yeah, I've had
that's got to be so stressful.
I've had those weeks.
Yeah,
I've had those weeks where I'm just, I don't think I can do this.
Right.
Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah, yeah. So is that
sitting down in front of an empty computer screen, knowing that you have to start writing a Simpsons script, is a horrible feeling.
Yeah, yeah.
That first joke, writing that first joke is just, and until you get it, you're just dog shit.
Well, does being part of a team help out a little bit on that because you're bouncing ideas off of each other?
Yeah, I'm not part of a writing team. I was, you know, you leave the room and you have your notes and your own
line. Really?
But then you go home by yourself and you start. And you sit there. And that's a terrible feeling.
I could never, there'd be no
you
way.
Could.
I'd get,
you could. Yeah, you could.
Dude, I'd get fired. I'd get fired so fucking quick off of a job like that.
You'd get super fired.
I've got no.
You'd get super fired.
right, yeah.
Dude, I got super fired.
Yeah, they'd burst it through the door and they'd say, Aaron, you're super fired.
Ultimate fired.
Yeah, yeah. There's no other level to this. You are the worst. But yeah, I mean, being a self-starter is not in my family tree.
Right. That's understandable.
Yeah.
Happens at the best of
them. Yeah, yeah. Except for, I guess, fake radio.
yeah.
So what's coming up for you, man? Podcast wise,
If you
when can we expect to hear something on that?
It's probably will start in late January.
Okay.
So early February.
Cool.
And look for it. It's follow me on Twitter at Dana J. Gould, or Facebook me.
Yeah.
Or go to my website, danagould.com.
Excellent. And we'll put some links.
Yeah,
to
no,
that
there's, effect, this is going to be a good year. I'm very excited about it.
Good. And
I'll be on Jimmy Kimmel January 18th.
Oh, nice. Excellent. I'll be looking for. Are you doing stand up on that one or just as a guest?
No, I like to do stand. I could go. I like to do stand up.
Yeah.
It's like you want to come out and just take. No, I want to do a set.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
what I do.
Yeah.
George Carlin said, like on The Tonight Show, he goes, I always do a set. He's dead. He said it in the past tense. I do a set.
It's kind of like REM.
Wait, he died? Like REM.
Yeah. No.
It's what I
want. Not George Carlin.
Not George Carlin. It's what I do.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I stand up there? It's
right,
what I do.
Right. That's and is it something that does it still make you nervous? Going up on stage like that?
Or? Well, yeah, that is. Like, I did Conan recently, and you know, you're backstage behind that curtain. And
yeah.
Yeah. You're going to be the only thing on TV in a minute.
God, that's got to be nerve-wracking.
Yeah, you got to think of something else.
I always enjoy talking to comedians on this show because, one, they're good talkers.
Yeah.
They're good at talking. And, two, I'm always baffled at how you get up there without, like, a backing band. You know? Because like that's something that I've always been terrified about is like you take the guitar away and you got nothing.
You got nothing.
You got a microphone. That
I've had big rock stars say, I don't know how you get up there without a guitar.
Yeah, yeah,
that's funny.
It's you do a good job at it, man. And I'm a big fan. And I thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, my God. My pleasure.
Yeah. Yeah. This has been a lot of fun chatting with you. And so you're playing tonight at Chop Suey.
Chop Suey.
Laugh Hole.
Tomorrow night at the International Film Festival Cinema.
Right. Yeah.
Doing
at the Uptown Theater.
The Uptown Theater in Seattle, doing a live riff on Plan 9 from Outer Space with some of the guys from Mystery Science Theater, Frank Conniff and Trace Ballou.
Yeah, how did that get put together? Because I was looking at that and I was like, wait a minute, was he part of the Mystery Science Theater? 3000?
I'm very good friends with all of them.
Okay.
And have been since before Mystery Science Theater.
Gotcha.
I've known Joel for years.
Yeah.
And when I came up to do the show, People's Republic of Comedy, who are promoting the show, said, do you want to host a movie at the film festival? And I thought, yeah, you know, it'd be fun. Let's do Christmas of the Apes, and we'll do Planet of the Apes, I'll host it. And then they couldn't because Fox isn't releasing any prints because the DVD of the other one's coming out now and whatever. And we ended up doing Plan 9 from Outer Space, which is like the golden fleece of bad movies.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah,
they have never done it on Cinematic Titanic. So I called Joel and said, let's do this. This will be great.
Yeah.
And they wanted me to do it, and you guys should come. And he wanted to do it, but he's traveling right now with his family. So I got special dispensation to use the other guys.
Nice. Excellent, excellent. Yeah. Well, that's gonna be fun.
That'll be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'll be
so hop in your, because this show is going live on Sunday. So hop in your hot tub time machines and go back and buy tickets for these shows.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, Dana Gould, thank you so much.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah. You can find us at air-raid.net. On iTunes, which we really enjoy getting your ratings and reviews, so please do that for us. Do us a solid there. We're going to go out today with the Young Evils once again. This song is called "Get Over It," and we will see you next week. Speaking of Conan O'Brien appearances, our guest next week, Alan Stone, who is just on the Conan show, will be joining us. So make sure you tune in for that. And we will see you next week. Have a good one. And all the people there were unaware, and all the cops were coming down. My mind is searching for something I want to say. Their love is so stationary, while ours wants to run and say, defend us.